start with our minutes, but in the absence of the quorum, I think we should just go straight to the presentation by the Office of the Auditor General. And then we'll come back to the minutes later. Can we, and we welcome you, Mr. Barry Wheeler, and your delegation. And it's over to you.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. Honourable members, thank you for having us here today. We appreciate the opportunity. My colleague, Mr. Strongwa, who is the business executive responsible for a portfolio of audits under my control, will actually do the presentation itself. I think it may be useful for you members and the Chair just to have some background as to where Defence is at this point in time. When my report, approximately 3 years ago, we were in a situation where the Department of Defence
Just put the mic on again. The honourable members are also technicians, must be aware of that. Multi-skilled.
I don't think it's the phone,
no? No, the phone was on when I switched off. Yeah, let me switch off again and check.
Is that any better?
No.
Okay.
No, we can hear you.
Go.
Still that background.
Go. No. The sound comes when I switch off.
Ah. Okay. Yes. No, don't switch off. Switch off. I want to switch off. Do you have the sound? Do you
have the sound? No. It's still on.
Yes.
This is fine.
Okay.
I think that gets rid of the background sound. Thank you, Honourable Member. Thank you, Chair. As I was saying, I think I should just give a little bit of background as to where we are with Defence at the moment. Approximately 3 years ago, we had about 16 qualifications on the Department of Defence in total. That covered an entire range of items on the balance sheet that we normally refer to as assets and liabilities of the Department, and also a large number of income and expenditure issues. The revenue items, approximately 2005-06, the department started working on that, and I see the individual responsible for dealing with the revenue items, Mr. Barney Engelbrecht, is in fact here from Defence today. They started a program which took approximately 3 years to implement. The way they did it was to do it in small pieces within the department, and eventually the revenue aspects of the department were resolved. Approximately 2 years ago, we started seeing the resolution and controls being put in place for better control over expenditure within the department itself. Up until fairly recently, we've had ongoing problems with what we as auditors and accountants refer to as accruals. Now, accruals are items which have been purchased and which have been delivered to the department and services rendered just before the year end, but the department does not get paid for them. Now, being a massive department, and I think that's a given fact we need to accept, it is very difficult to get to every base and every unit to determine exactly which invoices at year end have not been paid. Now, the exercise itself is fairly simple. But when one talks about dealing with soldiers whose prime function is not really administration or accounting, in many cases, it does become a little bit difficult to get them to understand why they're doing certain things as well. Fortunately, we got around the issue of the accruals. That was the main area of concern. The issue of leave, we resolved, and also the issues around contingent liabilities, which was a further problem. Now, contingent liability is it's normally something in the legal field where there's a claim against the department, and we normally go and engage with the lawyers concerned or the professionals to determine what is the likelihood of the department having to pay that amount, and then we'd raise that as a contingent liability, for instance. The leave issue was mainly the provision for leave. In other words, the leave that people had are owed at the end of a financial year. That needs to be calculated and determined, because if those people leave the organization at any point in time, the department is liable for it. So they provide for that. That's what that means. What we've seen is the Department of Defense, we started an exercise approximately 3 years ago where we started engaging very regularly with the department through different levels. The first was I was engaging on a quarterly basis with the relevant minister at that specific time and subsequently with the new minister to bring to the minister's attention the areas of concern that existed within the department that were concerning me as an external auditor, obstacles and possible thoughts on how that could be resolved. I must be honest, I have great respect for the current minister in terms of her commitment, in terms of what she has done. I think if it wasn't for the minister's commitment and the seriousness with which she listens to what we have to say, and the seriousness with which she takes what we say, I don't think we would have seen the improvement we've had to date. I'm fairly convinced of that. The new Secretary for Defense is trying hard, but there are limitations, and I do believe that one of the areas of focus just going forward at the moment needs to be the issue of driving the right attitudes and people having the will to want to move towards keen audits is also a further issue. It's very typical the bureaucracy which comes through in the Department of Defense. Quite often one would state, well, look, this is what needs to be done, and people need to take the initiative. The first thing they will turn around and tell you, yes, but we haven't received a directive to do it. Now, the directive is not an issue. To me, you are appointed in terms of an act to do a specific job. You must use your initiative and go and do the job. You can't wait for a director for everything. If you're appointed to be in charge of, let's say, a very simple thing such as safety and health officer, your job is determined to a great extent already. If you're now instructed to ensure that there's compliance with the legislation that goes with it, you don't need a directive to tell you that. But typically in a defense force, they want a directive from somebody to tell them that this is something they've got to do. So there is still a bit of bureaucracy within the structures. In my discussions last night with the minister, before she left to come down to Cape Town, I shared the view with her that this was an area of concern to me, and I do believe this is one of the obstacles the department still has to deal with. In other words, having a very clear vision of what defense wants to look like, in, let's say, 5 years' time, and for that to be bought into by everyone in the Department of Defense, to have an organization where, let's call it, personal mastery of excellence is achieved. That's what I'd like to see from members of the Defense Force, them reaching a level of personal mastery of excellence in what they do. And I believe that alone would go a long, long way in resolving a lot of the issues in defense. I think that's one of the reasons and one of the obstacles as to why they're not sitting with a clean report now. Unfortunately, we've still got the assets issue. Now, the assets issue, they are tackling in the right way. They've broken it into three different phases. That's the remaining qualification from last financial year. Assets and defense is a massive project. I think, if I recall correctly, there's over 3 million individual items on the assets register in total. It is not easy to control. Geographically, they're all over the show. We're dealing with very specialized military equipment at times here, vehicles. We are dealing with items which need to be controlled. And there's a tremendous amount of mobility and flexibility that occurs within the Department of Defense in any 1 year. People are moved from base to base. They go for training in different places. So the control and movement of assets, and I'm talking here about the movable assets, is problematic and a bit more problematic than a lot of other departments. And we recognize that. But that is also a risk that we also accept that will occur in defense. When it comes to the issue of immovable assets, that is settling down quite nicely. Now, the fixed assets register is basically in place. There is now a degree of synergy between the Department of Public Works and the Department of Defense. Defense will take over all of their assets into their registers. Still one area of somewhat concern to myself that still needs to be addressed, and maybe this committee, the Honorable Chair, can deal with it, and that's the question of intellectual property assets. I know a number of years ago the department requested Arms Corps to ensure that that register was drawn up and brought up to date in terms of intellectual property. But there's two things which are occurring in defense. One is an historic issue on assets. Assets used to be counted every 3 years in defense on a rotation basis because of the volume. Now, when I listen to the Auditor General speaking, he says, when a CFO is appointed, a CFO has got one function, and that function is to produce monthly financial statements. Not monthly income and expenditure statements, but financial statements. And there's a big difference. Income and expenditure statements indicates what's spent and what's coming. It does not tell you much about the future and what you owe and what you're liable for and what's owed to you. Things such as the creditors, the debtors, the provisions, the value of assets, the changes in those values, the disposal of assets, etc. So what the Auditor General, and I know the Accountant General supports this view, they've introduced a compulsory set of financial statements to be prepared at the end of September this year. Half yearly. But I am already aware of the fact that the intention of defense is not to state the assets values in that process. But the argument that we put forward is if you start preparing at least to start off with quarterly financial statements, Honorable Chair members, you're actually closing the books properly. You're determining what your accruals are at that date. You're determining what your debtors are, what your creditors are, what your housing security guarantees that the department stands in for is, what that leave provision is that you need to make sure is on the books, what your contingent liabilities are, etc. That now gives practice within the department. Instead of coming along at the end of the year and saying, well, all units and departments must now determine what the accruals figure is for the year end, in other words, what's been delivered and not paid for, that should be done on a monthly basis. Because once they've practiced doing that throughout the year on a monthly basis eventually, they're used to doing it. It becomes part of the process and part of the day-to-day operations and activity of the department. So when they come at year end, it's not a shambles. Because they've had practice in the year, it's an area where they can actually learn to excel at and do it well and properly. Now, the reason I'm saying this is because unless we get credible information which has been developed within the Department of Defense through the structures. And when I talk about credible information, I'm not just talking about financial statements. At the moment when the financial statements are presented to us, those financial statements, we do find a lot of errors in them, and we need to correct those. These are items which they themselves should be picking up. That these are items that the internal auditors should be picking up. These are items that the highly qualified members of the audit committee should be identifying when the financial statements go to them before submission to the Auditor General. So there is a need to improve the quality of what is being produced. And I'm not only talking about financials here. I'm talking about all quarterly reports, whether it deals with compliance issues within the department, finances, or whether it deals with governance issues or service delivery issues. Now, how do we get to that point? In my discussions with the Chair and with the Minister this week, I did raise the issue of compliance checklists which need to be built in. And the Minister has appointed a compliance officer, in fact a former colleague of mine, who's well specialised in this area, Sir Wally van Heerden, to prepare a comprehensive compliance framework for the Department of Defence. And they've indicated they will build in checklists. Now, this checklist would be compliance-based. So if you're going through, let's say, a supply chain management procurement process, if you're the person who's got to give the final authorization, you will receive all the documentation together with a checklist. That checklist will say, have you started off by going through Treasury Regulation 16 Act? Is this a deviation case? If so, who authorized the deviation? Okay. Did you ensure that the document, let's call it the request for tender, was sent out? Or if it's, let's say, 500,000 Rand or less, were at least X number of quotes obtained, whatever the process might be? And each step through that, all of those compliance issues need to be ticked off, and somebody needs to sign that document and take accountability so that we ensure compliance within the department. That's still a big area of concern. Of lesser concern at the moment is the issue of performance information. There's one thing that Department of Defense now, after the last 3 years, seems to have got right for a change. We're actually seeing that the information is far more reliable. It's supported by evidence now, and that we are comfortable that it's something that is being dealt with and taken seriously. Another area I want to just touch on is this plan that they had in place for ASDIS was over a period of 3 years. Now, phase one of that plan was supposed to be finalized on the 31st of March last year, which would hopefully give a clean audit. But I think there was a bit of misunderstanding in defense. When we look at ASDIS, we look at everything, not just the ones that they say they're going to get right. At the moment, there's approximately 6 million rands worth of assets that are not actually recorded on assets registers. It's not material to the department as a whole, but it's something that needs to be dealt with. But this action plan did not bring them to the stage they wanted to be at 31 March. And I would suggest that your committee, Honourable Chair, actually monitors and asks for a quarterly feedback on the progress being made on dealing with this assets issue. We're really 6 months into this new year. One of the things I did share with the Minister last night was the fact that we have only just seen the action plan to address the issues for last year, which gives 6 months to actually implement. And the Minister is going to give that her personal attention. The other area I just want to touch on as well, which needs some follow-up, is the disposal policy on assets. At the moment, there are a lot of old assets within the Department of Defence. And honourable member, I see you nodding your head from past experience with this committee. It is an area of concern. There's a lot of old items lying around there. These have to be counted every time one goes through. They've got to be maintained, looked after. There needs to be a proper clearance. Let's call it a clearing out of the old assets. One, it'll bring in revenue for the department, and I think it'll give them a better base from which to work from going forward. I've also suggested to the Chair on Tuesday, and I hope you don't mind me mentioning it, Honourable Chair, that I think it will also be useful for this committee either to have the Audit Committee sitting in one of the sessions, or to arrange for the Chair to meet with the Chair of the Audit Committee to meet with your Chair, maybe on a one-on-one basis, a couple of times during the year as well. And then they can give the assurance to your Chair in this committee on what they are doing about the controls and the risks within the Department of Defense. Because they are paid well. There's some good members now being appointed to that committee. And I believe let's allow them to play their role fully and make use of them as best we can, that expertise. I also want to mention that the special defense accounts, we're still waiting for the financial statements. And maybe the members just need a bit of clarification on this one. Defence initially indicated that the accounts of this special defence account need to be prepared on the same basis as that of the department. Now, unfortunately, the accounting standards have changed, and from the 1st of December last year, all public entities and similar type issues, including this fund, needs to be prepared on the GRAP basis, the Generally Recognized Accounting Standards. Financial statements were prepared on the normal departmental basis. Treasury eventually made the final decision and advised the Department of Defense, and I beg to differ, and if I'm lying, please correct me, Mr. 7th of June, they were informed?
Yes.
Yeah, 7th of June. Treasury finally made a decision and informed Defense that they need to draw up the SDA accounts on the accruals basis. And that requires a major change, because it means changing the accounting records for the entire year. That decision was ratified by the minister, and the minister issued instruction that those financial statements be prepared on that basis. We are expecting to receive those financial statements shortly, but that is the reason for the delay. That's just a wrap-up, basically, honourable members. I'd very much like to see the Department of Defence moving towards a clean audit. I think a lot of work's been done. I think the interrogation by members of this committee of the department has been useful and helpful in this process up to now. I think it's a question of my concern with the ability of defence to sustain what has been achieved to date. And if you don't mind, honourable members and chair, I'd very much like you to include in your engagements with the Department of Defence some assurance from their side as to what are they doing to sustain the good practices and the good processes that they have put in place to address the prior year's findings. What we've seen is departments reaching this stage and then suddenly regressing and going backwards because of the lack of capacity, skills and ability to sustain what has been put in place. I think with that, I'd like to just hand over to my colleague to take us through in a very simple and basic way so all of us can understand well, if you don't mind me, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'll take you through the audit findings of the last financial year, that is the year 2010-2011. I will go through the briefing document, which I believe you all have this document. This document has been prepared in two parts. There is part one, which is the introductory part, which contains the information which to a large extent is disclosed in the annual report, but which we have highlighted just to bring everything into perspective and to highlight certain areas of importance. And then there is part two, which deals specifically with the audit findings resulting from our audit of the last financial year. Let's go page by page. Page two gives the content of what is in part one and what is in part two. Let's go to the next page. Page three, we start with the reputation, promise and mission. The Auditor General has a constitutional mandate, and as the supreme audit institution of South Africa, it exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. We always start our presentations with this statement to bring or to conscientize the audience of what our institution is all about, and also to remind ourselves of what our mission is and our role in what we do, that is auditing. Paragraph 2, introduction. The purpose of the briefing note is to provide an insight into the general, into the Auditor General of South Africa, AXA, into the issues resulting in the audit findings of the department. If you go to the last paragraph, the entities that report to the minister that we're going to report on include the AMSCO Group, Special Defense Account, South African National Defense Force Fund, and the Castle Control Board. These are the institutions that we audit that are under the defense portfolio that this report is all about. You can go to the next page. On the background, the mandate of the department, that is of DOD, Department of Defense, this derives from the constitutional mandate from Section 2002 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996. The Constitution was given substance in the Defense Act, that is the mandate of the Department of Defense. The vision of the department is effective defense for a democratic South Africa. And the mission of the department is to provide, manage, prepare, and employ defense capabilities commensurate with the needs of South Africa as regulated by the Constitution, national legislation, parliamentary and executive direction. The accounting basis of the department. The department is required to account on the modified cash basis of accounting and must prepare its financial statements in terms of the National Treasury Guide for national and provincial departments. The department utilized the following accounting system, that is the FMS, PERSOL, and also various other logistical systems to record its transactions. That mainly relates to the fixed assets. These are the bases that all the other national departments are required to report on, that is the modified cash basis. So the Department of Defense also reports on a similar framework. The special defense account on the next page, the reporting framework for the special defense account changed from an entity-specific basis in 2010-11 as approved by National Treasury to the GRAP basis of accounting. As a result of the change in the reporting framework, the department has still not submitted signed financial statements to the ABSA. That is in line with what my colleague was explaining, that due to the change, they have not yet submitted the financials. We should be able to finish the audit of the financials by the end of November, if we receive it in the next few days.
That is GRAP.
That is GRAP, yes.
What is GRAP?
GRAP is Generally Recognized Accounting Practice. That is comparable to GAAP, which is Generally Accepted Accounting Practice, but GRAP normally applies to the state entities. The AMSCO Group, Castle Group, Customs Control Group, and the SANDF Fund. The AMSCO Group, Customs Control Board, and the SANDF Fund prepare financial statements in accordance with South African standards of GRAP, that is the same basis. Governance issues. When we talk about governance, we normally refer to the audit committee and also to the internal audit, which is the governance existing within the entity itself or within the department itself. When we talk about Department of Defense and Special Defense Account, the appointment, functions, and composition of the audit committee was in terms of Section 77 of the PFMA as amended. The committee was in place for the 2010-11 financial year. The required meetings occurred during the financial year. The audit committee reported in their report on material breakdowns in the functioning of controls, procedures, and systems. So the audit committee did exist for both DOD and Special Defense Account. When it comes to the SANDF Fund, the fund did not have an audit committee in place during the year. Management indicated that it will be a shared committee with defense. The SANDF Fund is a very small fund, and that is why management believes that it should have a shared committee with the department itself, because it's not worth having its own audit committee because of its size. AMSCO Group and the Customs Control Board, the entities had an audit committee in operation throughout the financial year, and the audit committee satisfactorily fulfilled its responsibilities for the year. Internal audit, Department of Defense and Special Defense Account. Internal audit unit was established in terms of Section 38 of PFMA as amended, and the structure approved by the Minister on 25 August 2008. However, the position for the new head of internal audit was advertised but is still vacant. The approved establishment has also not been filled with qualified and skilled staff. So that's a matter of concern as far as the audit, internal audit is concerned for the department and also for Special Defense Account. It's an NDF fund.
Can we just pause on this one, because this is important in terms of the governance of the organization. One talks about governance. The audit committee is who internal audit reports to. Now, when this new structure was put in place in 2008, the new approved establishment, there was also a decision that came subsequent to that, that there would be a separation between the functions of the Inspector General for the Department of Defense, who was doing the Inspector General type compliance work within the Department of Defense, and also the internal audit work. So that separation occurred. Over the past year and a half, we've seen the Inspector General focusing predominantly on Inspector General type work within the Department of Defense, and less and less on the internal audit side of things. So we are not comfortable with the level or the extent of internal audit over this last year. And we're hoping that the appointment of your head of internal audit and the filling of the new structure for the department, which is called internal audit, would partially address that concern. But really, 6 months into this year, we've still not got a fully functioning and effective internal audit department in defense at this point. I think it's something we just need to take note of, and something that this committee, Honorable Chair, just inquires about. I do believe that they're in the process of appointing someone right now, but there's also the substructure as well that's got to go with that. Because I'm almost certain that once the head of internal audit is appointed, we're not going to see the Inspector General being involved in internal audit much longer. Thank you. I apologize for that interruption.
Thank you, Barry, for that one. Still on internal audit, still on page 6. SANDF fund. Due to the nature and size of the fund, a separate internal audit function is not warranted, and the function should be shared with defense. For the AMCO Group and Capital Control Group, these entities had an internal audit function in operation throughout the financial year. Next page, page 7. On this page, we just show the breakdown of the budget in terms of the different programs. Program 1 to 8, administration, landward defense, air defense, maritime defense, military health support, defense intelligence, general support, force employment. You see that the total budget at the bottom there is 30.4 billion, of which the bulk goes to program number 2, which is the landward defense, at about 9.2 billion. And then the next large portion goes to general support, which is 7, and then number 1, which is administration. That is also in the annual report. It just gives you a picture of how the expenditure for the department is allocated. On the next page, we look at still the allocation of the expenditure in terms of the classification. Right, we go to the next page. And then the next page, paragraph 4, that is the audit report history, where we look at, that is page 10. The audit report history, where we look at the history of the audit findings for the last 3 years, year 2008-09 up to the recently audited year 2010-11. If we look at the qualifications, we see that in this year we only have one qualification, that is on tangible and intangible capital assets, that is for the year 2010-2011. And the similar qualification has been there throughout the years. For the past, I don't know how many years, but we are only showing 3 years here. The other area that used to be of concern, or other areas that used to be of concern, as my colleague has pointed out, was accruals, but you see that was resolved after the year 2008-09. It was no longer a qualification. Same with the others, which is lease commitments, irregular expenditure, departmental revenue, goods and services. all those used to be qualified in the previous years, but the issues were resolved after the year 2008-09. So we now only have one area of concern, which is quite a big challenge, which is the tangible and intangible assets. That is for the Department of Defense. At the bottom of the page, when you look at the special defense account, you see that we have not had problems with qualifications in the past, but the current year's audit is still in progress, so we still are waiting for the results of that one. On the next page, for the SANDF funds, for the Capital Control Board, and for the AMSCO Group, we have not had any serious audit findings for this year. So it's only the department mainly.
What would be serious audit findings?
I mean qualification.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think.
If I may make a suggestion, I think what I'd really much like to do is to possibly sit down at some point in time for maybe 1.5-2 hours with yourself and your committee and just take you through a process of how we go about doing an audit and just some of the methodology that we actually apply. I think it might be very beneficial from a financial perspective for members of the committee. If your committee could find time for something like that, if you believe it would be useful. Just to describe and indicate the different types of qualifications and modified reports you can get, what we mean by materiality. And I think really what the Chair is currently referring to is an issue that we refer to as materiality. In other words, we decide that, look, if a item is wrong in the financial statements, and let's say that value is above 0.5% or 1% of the total expenditure of the department, then that would be significant. And the users of those financial statements would need to know about it, and therefore we'd qualify a report. The reason why they qualified on assets is because on assets, there's a thing called assertions that we check. So when we go and do assets, we check a number of things. One of those is the process under which those items are actually purchased to start off with, and that's before it becomes an asset. But once it arrives somewhere at a base or is taken into use, then that item, there's a delivery note that needs to be signed off and to say it's been delivered at place X. We want to see it coming onto the asset register at place X at a specific value. Now, that could be the purchase price or it could be another value, depending on the policy within the department. The second thing we want to see is what happened to that invoice. Was the items actually received? Was it taken on charge? What is the value? But when we come at the end of the year to do the audit, we check a thing called existence. If that item's on the assets register, it has to exist somewhere. Now, this year we went to bases, and when we could not find the items, we went around together with the person responsible for those items on the base, together with the commanding officer in a lot of cases as well. And when we could not find those items, we got them both to sign our working paper that those items are not there. Now, quite often, just the person who works with the assets doesn't understand processes either. Just to explain to you how difficult this can be sometimes, the person will say, no, it's not there. Now, we're looking for a vehicle with a specific registration plate. Okay? But that vehicle might well be in use somewhere. Someone might have signed up for it that morning and taken it to go and collect, let's say, rations at the local supply and assistance stores, for instance. But the person who's responsible for those assets, that is not aware of the fact that that vehicle could possibly be taken out. So it's auditors we even check things such as that. An item could have been sent for repair, but then there needs to be a repair register where we can see someone signed for that, and yes, that asset's currently at place X being repaired. It's all of those processes that we actually carry out with this issue of existence. The other thing we look at is the rights and obligations over an asset. Things such as photocopier machines, cell phone contracts, etc., contractual arrangements, leases and that type of thing. So another thing we look at when we go through this exercise is the value of the items. How do you value a Gripen aircraft after it's done so many hours in the air, for instance? Little unknown things. Let's give you an example. One of the few unknown things about aircraft is the less they're flowing, the more maintenance they require. Now, you know the restrictions on the department's budget at the moment. Now, it's a proven fact that military aircraft, the less that you fly them, the greater it's going to cost you to maintain them. Because they're standing, you've got seals which leak and disintegrate, etc., because of the lack of use as well. The same applies to a lot of the blue water fleet type boats as well. But these are just some of the things which are internationally out there and people are knowledgeable about these things. And I think it's one of the reasons why we're getting questions raised on the issues of the use of the arms deal acquisitions that have been made. Another area of concern is we need to determine exactly where that asset is. It might be in Burundi. Okay. Now, what is the control over the assets in this case? When we send a vehicle, let's say, to DRC, what is the process that we follow? How do we know that that vehicle, that armored car, or that tank, or that specialized military equipment came back? So there has to be processes, and this has to be properly documented as well. And all of these items we look at as a whole. The other area of concern is what we call cutoff at year end. Was that item actually still in existence in the Department of Defense? Did we own it at that point? Or is it part of the delivery process still to come? Have we in fact received it or not? And that's why we do what we call two-directional auditing. We take the assets register and we go and find that item. But then we also walk around the base and we go and we make a list of items we find on that base. Then we go and check it to the assets register. And quite often you'll find it's not on the assets register. Now this is the problem we experienced this year. They appointed consultants for costing millions of rand. The consultants went in, came back and said, no, we sorted out all the assets at this base. When we went in and did our audit, we'd go and we'd have a look at the unit and we'd find things that were not on the assets register, items which were incorrectly valued, found items on the floor which were not on the assets register. And this is after consultants have said they've done the job. So we did raise this issue with the Secretary for Defense, the CFO, and the Minister over the monitoring of these consultants and their ability to have properly done this job. Again, we've got, when we went in, you'd find there would be, just to give you examples, because I think you can understand examples better. Let's say there's an aircraft, and there's an overhaul kit for that aircraft. We'd see that kit had been fully counted. But when you open that box, that item's supposed to contain 12 items for that specific maintenance or overhaul. When you open the box, there's only 5 items. Where's the other 7? What happened? But that item is not complete. We cannot say the assets are complete because there are 7 parts which make up that kit that are not there. And this is the type of things we were experiencing. Just to give you some idea. So I know the department was very unhappy about the fact that we qualified the assets, but I think you need to understand why we did it from your perspective as well. So we were not satisfied that all the assets existed, that they were all taken on charge, they were properly valued, that we owned them all of those processes. So all the assertions, as we call them in auditing, we could not actually feel comfortable on any of them. And that's the area where the Department of Defense has got to work, and they've got to take this issue seriously. And unless they take it seriously and take firm action in addressing these issues, it's not going to happen. And they need to keep to their timelines. We were hoping to have a keen audit, as I mentioned last year. We were just as shocked, I think, as what defense was. But when we started looking at the underlying reasons, I fully understood exactly why. There's got to be better monitoring. There's got to be proper verification of what consultants are doing. It's no good bringing in consultants with manpower and that and just let them run wild. They've got to understand the systems. There are still problems with the systems in defense, the recording systems. But there is a patch that's been put on that, a warehousing register on top. It's something we suggested, which Treasury agreed to. But even that has not necessarily been managed well. So those are just some of the problems that you have some sort of feel for this issue of assets. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Perry. Let's now go through the audit findings on page 11, that is now part 2. We start with the Department of Defense. As indicated previously, the DOD received a qualified audit opinion, and they were qualified on tangible and intangible assets. Let's look at the background of this qualification, the qualification itself, and the internal control deficiencies, and our comment on that qualification. The background is on the first column, that is on the first, on the same page 11, that's 5.1. The department, for the first time, disclosed figures in the financial statements for 2010-11. On the next page, as disclosed in paragraph 10 of the accounting officer's report for the year ended 31st March 2011, the department faces various challenges and has developed a three-phase rectification plan. During the year under review, the department focused on serial controlled terms. That is phase one. Phase one has, however, been partially addressed. The audit revealed serious shortcomings relating to the serial controlled items with regards to all contributors, to all accessions. So that is what the department did to try to start to deal with the, with the fixed assets, because previously they were not disclosed at all in the financial statements. So they had to start somewhere, and they started now with phase one, and then they disclosed just those two classes of financial assets, that is phase one. If we go back to the to page 11, and let's look at the nature of the qualification, what we found wrong with what the department did. These assets are now stated at 76.9 billion, no disclosure in prior years. In disclosure notes 32, 33, and 34 to the financial statements, although the department has commenced addressing some of the prior year qualification methods, the process is unfinished in that the department could not provide sufficient appropriate audit evidence to support the amount disclosed, and the record did not permit application of alternative procedures. So that was the finding on the items that were disclosed. To go back to the previous page, let's look at the internal control deficiencies. What was the root causes? What was wrong with what the department did? The following deficiencies in the three fundamental key controls are key elements affecting the department's ability to disclose capital assets as required by National Treasury. When we look at the internal control deficiencies, we classify them under three. We first look at the leadership that looks at the question of what should the leadership have done, what should the management have done to put the matters under control. And then we also look at the financial performance management, that will be on page 13. We also look at the governance issues. So we classify the internal control deficiencies under those three headings. So let's look at the leadership on page 11, what the leadership should have done or did not do. Insufficient direct involvement by senior management to address risks associated with disclosure of assets and asset management. Senior management does not exercise oversight responsibility on the progress of current projects to ensure complete and accurate asset records. That is number one. Number two, personnel are not aware of the requirements, nor do they have the knowledge of the asset management framework and the departmental financial reporting framework issued by the National Treasury in all instances. Lack of training of staff on the current logistical system and asset management, as well as lack of skilled qualified staff. Number three, no dedicated asset management component established to ensure adequate monitoring and reporting to those charged with governance. Number four, management does not have approved updated policies and procedures, including the reporting processes to guide management at the lowest level to ensure compliance with National Treasury disclosure requirements and the asset management framework. Also, project plans do not include all control deficiencies and are not adequately controlled. The last bullet on the page, management does not ensure compliance with existing policies and procedures. relating to the identification, safeguarding, and movement and recording of assets, policies and instructions to perform accurate and complete asset counts are updated. So that is what we found to be the weaknesses in the leadership as far as the tangible assets are concerned. The other element or the other category of weaknesses in internal control relates to financial and performance management. That is on page 13. The first bullet, manual or automated controls are not designed to ensure adequate record keeping in a timely manner which is accessible and available and that the transactions are complete and accurately recorded for the various categories of assets in the financial statements as required by the National Treasury. Secondly, complete and accurate asset registers for all categories of assets are not in place that meet the minimum requirements of National Treasury and for disclosure purposes. Thirdly, lack of implemented controls to ensure that reconciliations are performed between the current logistic systems and the financial system with regard to additions and disposals. Also, lack of controls to ensure the correct classification of assets and that all assets are linked to the standard chart of accounts. The last bullet on that page, insufficient control over invoices, fair value documentation, receipt vouchers, issue vouchers, and disposal. On the next page, still under financial matters, the assets are currently managed on four logistical subsystems. The systems are not integrated, nor are they integrated with the financial system. Inventory and assets are also not separated on these subsystems. Records of source units, depots are still manual, or some units or depots are still manual, which are not integrated for reporting purposes. No system is currently in place to barcode all non-serialized assets and link them to the asset records to be able to identify the assets. Systems are not appropriate to facilitate irregular to facilitate regular, accurate, and complete financial information for the preparation of the financial statements. No timely processing of invoices, receipt vouchers, issue vouchers, and disposals to ensure accuracy of asset register or ledgers. Lack of proper asset counts, including roll forward procedures to ensure complete and accurate asset records at year end. No processes in place to ensure complete and timely preparation and submission of asset registers in detail as at 31st March. So that was what was wrong, or what was our findings as far as the deficiencies in financial management are concerned. The last category of weaknesses in internal controls, still on page 14 at the bottom, is classified under governance. Under governance, no internal audit independent evaluations to ensure compliance with policies, procedures, and disclosure requirements. So those were the weaknesses that we found in the internal control, which led to this qualification. If you go back to page 12, sorry, page 11, and we look at the last column, that is the auditor's comments on what should be done about all these identified weaknesses. Management should ensure that policies and procedures are implemented to address the control deficiencies in the asset control environment, which should include controls over daily and monthly processing and reconciling of transactions. Management should ensure that all assets currently still on manual records are recorded in one of the subsystems. Management should also ensure that policies and procedures to address the control deficiencies in the control environment are developed, implemented, and monitored to ensure proper disclosure of the movement between opening and closing balances. All possible steps should be taken to ensure accurate, complete records and that supporting documents exist for all categories of assets, disposals, and additions, and that assets are properly identifiable and monitored to ensure compliance with national treasury requirements, guidelines, and regulations. A proper action plan must be developed, implemented, and monitored on the correct level to ensure accurate and timely recording to the minister and those charged with governance. An internal independent review process should be implemented to ensure accurate and complete recording to the minister and those charged with governance. So basically, these are our findings on the qualification on the tangible assets and also our comments and our identification of the root causes that led to this issue. We go on page 10. Sorry, on page 16. That is paragraph 5.2. We look at other issues now that we report on. Significant non-adherence to legislation. Compliance with laws and regulations, internal audit, as we have indicated before. The accounting officer did not ensure that internal audit function was in place as the requirements of treasury regulation. However, the inspector general did perform certain compliance and other procedures which were reported to the audit committee. The internal control deficiency thereof relates to governance. The department does not have a functional internal audit division, and the auditor's comment thereon, the necessary action should be taken to ensure that the head of internal audit is appointed and that the structure is filled. The other finding at the bottom paragraph relates to financial misconduct. Sufficient appropriate audit evidence was not available in all instances to determine if the accounting officer ensured that investigations were conducted and into all allegations of financial misconduct made against officials within 30 days from the date of discovery of allegations as required in terms of Treasury Regulation 4.1.2. And the internal control deficiency relating thereto was on leadership, insufficient direct involvement by senior management to address risks associated with non-compliance. Senior management does not exercise oversight responsibility to ensure compliance with laws and regulations. On financial and performance management impact, no independent component and processes in place to monitor compliance with laws and regulations. And on governance, the department does not have a functional internal audit division. The auditor's comments thereon, measures should be implemented to ensure that all policies and procedures are updated, implemented and monitored to ensure compliance. The minister appointed a compliance officer to assist her portfolio to develop a compliance framework to facilitate compliance with laws and regulations. So that issue has been addressed to some extent. On the next page, the other finding relates to annual financial statements, performance, and annual reports. One, the accounting officer did not implement adequate control systems for the safeguarding and maintenance of assets to prevent theft, losses, wastage, and misuse as required by the PFMA. Two, the accounting officer submitted financial statements for auditing that were not prepared in all material respects in accordance with modified cash basis of accounting determined by the National Treasury, supported by full and proper records in all instances as required by the PFMA. Certain material misstatements identified with regards to operating these commitments were subsequently corrected. However, the uncorrected material misstatements in capital assets resulted in the financial statements receiving a qualified audit opinion in contravention of Section 14.3A of the PFMA. The internal control deficiencies that led to that on leadership, they led to insufficient direct involvement by senior management to address risks associated with non-compliance. Senior management does not exercise oversight responsibility to ensure compliance with laws and regulations. Management does not have approved updated policies and procedures to ensure compliance with relevant laws and regulations. On the financial and performance management impact, existing manual and automated controls are not designed to ensure adequate records keeping in a timely manner which is accessible and available and that the transactions are complete and accurately recorded. Adequate controls were not in place to ensure complete and timely reporting to relevant authorities as required by laws and regulations. No independent components and processes in place to monitor compliance with laws and regulations. And under governance, department does not have a functional internal audit division which evaluates controls and accuracy of financial disclosures as well as completeness thereof. The auditor's comments, measures should be implemented to ensure that all policies and procedures are updated, implemented, and monitored to ensure compliance. The minister appointed a compliance officer to assist her portfolio to develop compliance framework to facilitate compliance with laws and regulations. On the next page, findings on human resource management and compensation. Some senior managers did not enter into performance agreements for the current year as per the requirements of PSR for B1 and Department of Defense Instruction PQL plan dated 1st January 2005. The control deficiencies were insufficient under leadership, insufficient direct involvement by senior management, under financial and performance management, no independent components and processes in place to monitor compliance with laws and regulations, and under governance, of course, internal audit division. Auditor comments, measures should be implemented to ensure that all policies and procedures are updated, implemented, and monitored to ensure compliance. The minister appoints a compliance officer to deal with that situation. At the bottom, procurement and contract management. Findings thereon related to, in some instances, goods and services with a transaction value of more than 500,000 were not procured by means of a competitive bidding process as per the requirements of the Treasury regulation. Number four, awards were made to suppliers who did not declare their employment by the date of their connection with a person employed by the state or their relationship. Going to the next page, their relationship with persons involved in the evaluation and or adjudication of leads as per the requirements of practice note number 7. Contrary to supply chain management requirements, this is not a requirement in terms of departmental policies. Number 5, instances were identified where senior managers did not disclose their business interests in a supplier to the department and to the executive authority as per the requirements of Chapter 3C1 of the Public Service Regulations. Number 6, in some instances, the supply chain management officials and or other role players and those whose close family members and or partners and or associates had a private or business interest in contracts awarded by the department failed to disclose their interest and in some instances participated in a process relating to the awarding of the contract contrary to the requirements of Treasury Regulation 16AB 8.4A and B. 7. Some employees performed remunerative work outside their employment in the department without written permission from the relevant authority as per the requirements of Section 30 of the Public Service Act and Department of Defense Instruction of 1999. Those were the findings under the procurement and contract management. If you go back to page 18 and we have a look at the internal control deficiencies that led to those findings. Under leadership, insufficient direct involvement by senior management and to address tasks associated and non-compliance. Senior management does not exercise oversight responsibility to ensure compliance with laws and regulations. Management does not have approved updated policies and procedures to ensure compliance with relevant laws and regulations. Under financial and performance management impact, the next page. Existing manual and automated controls are not designed to ensure adequate record keeping in a timely manner, which is accessible and available, and that the transactions are complete and accurately recorded. Adequate controls were not in place to ensure complete and timely reporting to to relevant authorities as required by laws and regulations. No independent component and processes in place to monitor compliance with laws and regulations. And the fourth, under governance, the absence of the functional internal audit division. And the, you'll note that the auditor's comments are more or less the same as above on this one. We can move to the next finding, that is page 20, on expenditure management. The accounting officer did not in all instances immediately upon the discovery reported irregular expenditure to the National Treasury as per the requirements of section 38.1G of the PFMA. And of course, the findings are almost similar to the previous one. Insufficient direct involvement by senior management to address the risks associated with non-compliance of these policies. Senior management does not exercise oversight responsibly to ensure compliance with laws and regulations. And of course, the auditor's comments are more or less similar as above. The next finding, or the next audited entity was the department. The next category of findings was the findings on predetermined objectives on the Department of Defense. That is at the bottom of page 20. There are no material findings on the annual performance report. As my colleague Barry explained earlier on, the department seems to have got that one right on the reporting of performance information. On the next page, the general control environment, the department did not have a functional internal audit division reporting items on special defense account. We move on now to the special defense account. The audit process for 2011 year is still in process, so we can't report on that one yet. Reporting items on the SANDF fund, no financial qualifications. Other matters, report on other legal and regulation requirements, compliance with laws and regulations, significant non-adherence to legislation, strategic planning and performance management. The finding is that no predetermined measurable objectives, expected outcomes and targets were set at the beginning of the financial year, and no evidence could be obtained that these objectives were agreed on by the executive authority as required by the 2010-11 Audit Directive, General Notice Number 1333 issued in Government Gazette 33872. The internal control deficiencies identified under leadership on page 21, oversight responsibility was not exercised regarding performance reporting and compliance, as the board was only appointed during August 2010. And the auditor's comment is that measures should be implemented to ensure the compliance in future. Those were the findings on the South African National Defense Force Fund. And on the next page, page 22, reporting items on the NCACC, that is the National Conventional Arms Control Committee, which regulates the sales of arms in South Africa. No deviations were reported on that one. Other matters, non-compliance with Section 23(1) of the Act. The NCACC did not submit three quarterly reports, April to June 2010, July to September 2010, and October to December 2010, on all conventional arms reports concluded during the preceding quarters to a committee of parliament as required in terms of Section 23(1)(b) of the Act. Reporting items for the Capital Control Board, no financial qualifications. On the next page, report on other legal and regulatory requirements, compliance with laws and regulations, findings significant under significant non-adherence to legislation, findings under procurement and contract management. The accounting authority did not apply the requirements of the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act 2000, Act No. 5 of 2000, in the procurement of goods and services above 30,000 as required by Section 2A of the Act. And the internal control deficiencies identified on that one is that the accounting authority under leadership is that the accounting authority has implemented supply chain management policies that do not comply in all respects with the stringent requirements of the PFMA and the PPPFA. Auditors comment controls should be implemented to ensure that the entity complies with set legislation. On the predetermined objectives, the following findings. The accounting authority did not finalize and submit a strategic plan for approval to the relevant executive authority on or before 1st April as required by the Treasury regulation. The accounting authority did not establish procedures for quarterly reporting the executive authority to the executive authority in order to facilitate effective performance monitoring, evaluation, and corrective action as required by Treasury Regulation 30.2.1. The third finding, the accounting authority did not ensure that the public entity has and maintains an effective, efficient, and transparent on the next page system of internal controls regarding performance management, which describes and presented how the entity's processes of performance planning, monitoring, measurement, review and reporting was conducted, organized and managed as required by the Section 51.1A of the PFMA. If you go to the previous page 23, the internal control deficiencies which led to the findings on predetermined objectives related to leadership. The accounting authority has implemented performance reporting policies that do not comply in all respects with the stringent requirements of the PFMA. And the auditor's comment is that control should be implemented to ensure that the entity complies with set legislation. On the next and last page, findings on performance information, predetermined objectives. I was unable to conduct the audit of performance against predetermined objectives as the public entity did not submit annual performance report as required by Section 56.2 of the PFMA. Reporting items on AMSCO, no reporting items on AMSCO. Honorable Chairman, thank you for giving us the opportunity to make the presentation. If there are any questions, we will entertain those questions.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, over to you. Honorable Mania, Honorable Kawadeli.
Thank you, Chair. I have a number of questions which I will set out under the basis for the qualified opinion, the emphasis of matter, the report on legal and regulatory requirements, and then one or two general questions. Chair, I think the Auditor General has dealt at length with the basis of the qualified audit opinion and the whole question of movable and immovable assets. And he has made clear recommendations in that regard. I wonder, though, if the Auditor General will perhaps expand on two points. The first is he expressed concern about the sustainability of good practices going forward. I wonder if he could expand on that point so that we can properly understand his concern. The second point is he expressed concern about the consultants engaged by the department. Again, I wonder if he could expand on that point and tell us who these consultants are, perhaps estimate how much they've been paid, and perhaps just expand on the point of concern. So that is on the basis of the qualified opinion. Chair, then, in respect of the emphasis of matter, the Auditor General does raise a concern about nearly 800 million rands worth of irregular expenditure. I wonder, and this is not a question, whether the Auditor General would please furnish me with the further detail and the particulars, and I know that the Auditor General would not be able to do this at this session, I understand that, but if the Auditor General could provide me with further particulars and details in respect of the irregular expenditure in the current year, and particularly the irregular expenditure under investigation. I would like some further information about the irregular expenditure, and I would expect that the Auditor General would provide that in writing within a reasonable period of time. Chair, then, under the compliance with regulatory environments, the Auditor General raises concerns about procurement and contract management. That struck me because, so far as I'm aware, that had not been raised previously. The Auditor General raises questions about competitive bidding processes, suppliers who might be employed by the state, senior managers who have not disclosed business interests, etc. This is, as far as I'm concerned, a cause for concern. And I wonder if the Auditor General would, again, in line with my request for more information about irregular expenditure, provide in writing further details about exactly which tenders did not comply with regulations, exactly who is supplying goods and is employed by the states, exactly who has not disclosed their business interests. Again, that would have to be by way of a memo or a letter within a reasonable period. Chair, on this question, because I'm concerned, I wondered if I could take advice from the Auditor General. It would seem to me that it may serve the public interest for the Auditor General to do a more focused audit in the supply chain management of the Defence Force. Now, I mean, I'm sure that there are different kinds of audits that the Auditor General carries out, from a kind of high level to a more detailed forensic audit. But it would seem to me that it may be in the public interest for the Auditor General to poke his nose into the business, the supply chain management system of the Defence Force. I think there's some, my hypothesis is there's some big skeletons in that cupboard. Finally, Chair, a general question about the special defence account. The Auditor General has explained why the special defence account does not form part of his report, and that is the reason that there's been a transfer to the GRAP basis of accounting. Just for my information, I wonder if the Auditor General could explain the reasons for that, if you like, transition, and what the implications of that are. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chen, and thanks to the Auditor General and his team. You know, I had a good 30 minutes while I was lost, thinking that I had 120. So I read through all this almost remaining 2 or 3 pages. And I came to the conclusion that I won't be able to answer question one by one. There are so many questions one would ask. But through you, Chair, maybe if the Portfolio Committee, we can interrogate its deficiency. Not now, maybe. Its deficiency, and check out the auditor's comment to make the way forward. Because the whole document is really, really calling upon us, even before we talk of the public interest, calling upon us, the Portfolio Committee, to really go through each of the deficiency to know how do we design the way forward based on what we'll be discussing, its deficiency. Fortunately, there are auditors' comments next to each decision that will give us a good program of action in terms of what do we do with the input. And finally, I want to say, read. This is a good document. This is a good document to propel us forward as a portfolio committee on defense. A country without defense, really, we can forget and go and sleep. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If there are no main, any other questions, I'll be... Oh, Honorable Masango.
Thank you, Chair. I'm only left with two questions, Sixwana. One is, the Auditor General has spoken about the contingency liabilities. Maybe if you can just go more on that issue. I didn't catch him all right. But something I would just want to ask is something that I just want to understand. What is the difference between properly prepared instead of fairly presented as required by the PAA? Just to get the difference on the two statements. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Mlambo. Honorable Mateza. I would suggest every time when you make a presentation, you give us the names in full and then followed by the acronym. Just do not take it for granted that we know what it means. We don't know.
Sorry, Chair. There is this SCOA, you know. So you are very economic here when you come with this kind of thing to some of us. We get lost. On page 14.
That's been for standard charter of accounts. It's an item which the Treasury prepares for each department. So there's a standardized methodology of allocating expenses to specific accounts themselves. So it's standard charter of accounts. But we take note of your commentary and we'll proceed as such in future without using abbreviation.
Honorable Mabeza.
Thank you, sir. Thank you to the Office of the Auditor General for their presentation. One would like to comment and also join the Auditor General when they are saying that at least there is an improvement where the department was having 16 qualifications. Now they've got only one qualification. At least we must also commend the department for their work that they are trying their best. But it seems there is a problem really about the asset. So I want to check with the Auditor General that on special accounts, defense accounts, page 5, they said that as a result of the change in the reporting framework, the department has still not submitted financial statements to the AGSA. I just want to check with them, when was this change affected, and was the department informed about inductions, some sort of induction or training? Because the Auditor General said that they are expecting the response by end of November. And if not by end of November, they have not yet. What is the charges on them, or what are they going to to pen? Is it penalized or what is it? What are we going to assist the department to improve this by end of November? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Would you say the overall overview that there is a lack of management capacity? Because I'll just imagine once, if you purchase a vehicle, you have papers that should be managed. When you receive that vehicle, you record it. When that vehicle moves from one place to another, there is fleet management on that. And even if you take it to Burundi, you must record that it has gone to Burundi and it's going to come back this next week or next year. Even your fueling should be recorded and such things. Are papers lost or there is general lack of management capacity?
Okay. Well, Chair, maybe I should start with your question first. I do believe that one of the issues that we need to keep in mind is that to produce credible information requires one or two things. The first item is to have the capacity within the department to be able to produce excellence. That's the first area. So if you do not have the capacity, it's going to definitely be an impeding issue or an obstacle in actually trying to achieve excellence and credible information. Now, when I talk about capacity, or my understanding of your word capacity, does not just mean people. It also refers to skills and competencies of individuals. It refers to the performance management system in terms of how you deal with poor performance within a department, how you reward good performance. And it also deals with the issue of capacity when it comes to the tools of the trade. So you can identify a person, let's say, to look after the service delivery performance information in the Department of Defense. And you can give that person maybe four or five people to work with to continually collate that information from all the different units throughout the year, to be able to review it, to report on that, to make sure there's supporting documents, to make sure that the reports that go through comply with all the requirements are done by due date, etc. But if you do not have a system or process, and that's what I'm talking about in terms of tools of the trade, the training, the systems, whether IT or manual, and the processes and policies that go with that, they can still fail. So when one uses the word capacity, to me it always has that slightly wider connotation. And yes, I think the major issue is the question of capacity to a great extent. But as soon as I say that, I come back to the one thing, and I made a specific note of it last night. I just said, yeah, I need to keep in mind. South African National Defence Force is behind, and therefore the base is low from which they are progressing, other than their prime role as soldiers. I think it's something we tend to even forget about as auditors, and that's why I'm making that. But you have individuals who are brought into the service predominantly as soldiers, they've trained well in that regard, but then they are required to take on all these other duties. Just take an individual who's given responsibility to look after a vehicle. That individual, unless they take ownership and treat that vehicle as if it was their own, to know where it is, where it's going, whether it's been maintained properly, whether it's washed regularly, whether the vehicle is not misused, etc. Unless the person has that attitude towards that asset, we're not going to get to where we want to go. And I think that's part of the problem, is that we have a number of people in the Defence Force. You must remember they changed the issue of mustering a number of years ago, where previously you were sort of moved upwards and elevated vertically within your Pacific mustering. So if, let's say, you were a special forces specialist, you'd remain within that environment. Now what we're seeing is, if we have a look at the head of material and logistics assets at the moment. We have an artillery officer, one of the best I think the country's produced for years, now looking after the assets. So again, it's a change. He's moving into an area which is not necessarily that of expertise for him. We see the same thing happening in other areas as well. So people are promoted horizontally or vertically, and not necessarily just always within the areas of expertise. But one looks at the competency of the individual to be able to do the job. Hopefully that's what it's focused on. So yes, there is probably a bit of both, but not so much the loss of documents anymore. This thing, I think it was one of the, I think it was Scopa, one of the generals referred to, and I'm going to use it in the lighter note if I may, Chair. He was referring to the problems they had, I think it was in Burundi at the time. When he says, yes, you go and you buy a tie and you get a receipt for a tie and a gorilla jumps out of the bush and grabs the receipt from you. No, I think that issue of documentation not being available, especially now in the foreign missions, and that problem is resolved. Those documents now being properly looked after and they are available locally here as well, so that problem is resolved. But I think this capacity issue goes back to the budgeting to a certain extent. There's a lot of expectations, but defence is also having problems in terms of being able to retain soldiers. It's not just a question of people not moving, people are moving as well. I always believe to stop people from moving, there is a way of dealing with it. I know I often talk about people performing at levels of excellence, because that's what we require, and that's what we pay for, and what we expect. If you do create professional, let's call it pools of excellence, within any department or organization or state, you generally find people want to come and work there, because they know that's the type of exposure that they get. And working with these highly professional individuals in that specific area is such of benefit to them, even if they move at some later date onto something else. But because of that high level of knowledge, they want to be there, they want to be part of that experience and part of that unit for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years, even if it's for internship and that type of thing as well. So where you do have these pools of excellence, you tend to find it attracts people, keeps people, retains them for longer as well. So by creating a sort of professional environment in that, you can make a difference there. I hope that answers that question. On the item of the irregular expenditure, if I may refer you, Mr. Munir, to page 240 of the report of the department, you'll see under section 27, the entire items, the details of all the irregular expenditure are actually listed there. I don't know if you're still going to need more than that, or whether you're comfortable with that information. It goes right through to page 241 as well.
The reply to that question is, yes, I would like more detail. So, for example, I mean, on note 27 on page 240, just by way of example, or in fact, perhaps a better example on page 241, under details of irregular expenditure under investigation, there's a general, for example, line, procurement without financial authority and government government order. I would like to know exactly what was procured or not procured without government order and the values thereof.
The Department of Health did that detail. We only have the detail of what we have already said, which is based on a sample which would not cover the comprehensive.
The Department of Health sample will do.
I can give you what sections we have got and what was part of that sample. But the balance, I'm afraid, would have to come from the department.
I'm happy with Honourable Member. What's the information about it in your position?
Okay. On the issue of assets, the concern of the sustainability going forward, my concern there was predominantly that the consultants were brought in,
consultants who paid, if I recall correctly, it was consulting one, is that correct?
Yes.
Consulting one. Consulting one was the group that did the work. I think they were paid in the region of about 65 million in the financial year concerned, 10-11. The concern there is that the way they've done this stock take and verification of the assets included also the way values were calculated and actual stock take and updating of the assets registers. Now, unless somebody takes those currently updated assets registers and does a regular stock count against those asset registers and regularly updates new acquisitions, and this is why I raised the issue of the disposal policy as well, and takes off the disposals that are taking place or the right hand, then those records will not remain accurate. We can't wait for months or years to take on new acquisitions and months and years to take off items, because then we have problems when stock takes are done. So that's where the concern lies. The capability of the department to ensure that those updated or allegedly updated asset registers remain in that condition updated. Otherwise, it's going to cost them another 65 million to do the same thing 3 years down the line. That's where that concern comes from. The concern over consultants was this issue predominantly over the adequate monitoring of the consultants. In other words, the quality and the transfer skills that need to go with that, relative to the assets. This exercise is not over yet. The consultants are still being utilized for this process. In terms of which tenders, we will try and get some information on that. The way we've undertaken this task, and it's the tenders and the supply chain management issue go hand in hand. What we did is, approximately 2 years ago, we did a fairly high-level review in certain sectors within the public service. On this issue of supply chain management, we were finding that we had this ongoing increase in irregular expenditure across the board in government. In most cases, when we did the analysis of the reasons driving it, was this whole issue of supply chain management not being complied with. What we then did is we did two things. We then extended that audit over the last 2 years now to a far more detailed, in-depth audit on supply chain management. So that has already taken place, Honourable Member, the focused work on supply chain management. But we've coupled that with this other aspect of, yes, we'll look at all of these issues on supply chain management, specifically the compliance aspects, but in looking at that, we can't ignore the human factor aspect of it. So that's why you find under human resource management here, we've also linked that in with that more intense audit and saying, well, who's involved in the supply chain management process? Who are these individuals? And then we go to places such as Cipro, such as invoices, payments made, and we'd get the telephone numbers, address, follow up that they're legitimate companies, find out who the directors are, do any of those directors, we'd run them against the payroll of the department, and we'd identify them. Sometimes we had lists like us, reams of paper. But then we needed to go through that and validate certain information as well. So we could identify that the Department of, let's say, Health is interacting and got a tender, but the person sits in the Department of Defense and is never in the Department of Defense, declared their interest in firm, let's call it ABC hospital supplies, and yet the Department of Health is purchasing, let's say, 3 million rands worth of stuff every year from ABC hospital supplies. That's the type of thing. Or we're finding relatives or spouses that are actually running the companies, but their husbands are working in the department, and none of that's ever declared. So these are the type of items we're trying to highlight now. So we're saying, yes, there's a major problem with compliance and supply chain management. That's got to be put right. Okay? Because anything that does not comply with the law in terms of the Treasury regulations must be regarded as irregular expenditure and compliance with law. So the human side's got to come in with that. So we have moved in that direction. I know a lot of departments are unhappy about it. It's an additional burden on them. We have engaged with Minister Baloyi and the Public Service Commission in this regard as well. We saw the practice note that came out from National Treasury in May, dealing with tenders now which need Treasury approval as well. So what we've done is, through this reporting, and this is part of it, there's been a general tightening up over supply chain management within government. But I don't think we'll see the results of that until at least next year, and during the current period now. So I don't think we need to do, from my perspective, I think we're doing a lot already on supply chain management. And what we're seeing reported here now is really down to the bone. Yes, there's still corruption, special investigations which are occurring, where certain issues are found and they followed up and further investigated as well. The SDA, I need to just explain that one. The Special Defence Account over the last couple of years has reported on what is referred to as an entity-specific basis. In other words, National Treasury have said, look, they don't have to fully comply 100% with the way it's done in the rest of government. It doesn't have to fully comply with the way in accruals accounting and that. But this is the nature of the transactions and the environment in which it works, as long as these basic prescripts which were provided to the department are complied with. So they didn't have to fully disclose everything, for instance, in their notes to the financial statements, etc. Now, the accounting standards changed from December last year. And the accounting standards say, now, from December, any year end after the 1st of December, you can no longer have an entity-specific basis of accounting. So Treasury had no option but to now review the case. And after reviewing it, they did discuss the matter with me as well. There are still some areas of concern. They decided, well, look, because public entities are all moving in the direction of full disclosure and almost becoming the same as companies, let's move the SDA as well in that direction. And I think it's the right thing to do. There's more transparency, etc., through that process. And that's what we're trying to achieve. Obviously, there will always be a sensitive area relating to certain specialist requirements, special operations, and you know, issues within the SDA. I think we need to accept that, and those will remain classified. And obviously, we can't report on those items by way of an open disclosure note, for obvious reasons. But that is just a small part of the SDA. There's not a great deal there. It's not like the intelligence services proper, such as the Secret Service or NIA. But there are sensitive areas there. So that, if anything does have to be dealt with, it doesn't go to SCOPA. In fact, the chair of SCOPA would refer that to the Standing Committee on State Intelligence or State Security, as it's called now. And they'll deal with those issues. And they deal with it very thoroughly, I must be honest. The problem with the SDA is, right up until the 7th of June, they were under the impression that for the year 10-11, that Treasury would allow them to report as in the past under the entity-specific basis. And they then wrote to us, and we wrote back and said, there is no such thing. You send us accounts which are based on entity-specific basis, we cannot audit them. There's no legal standing any longer in terms of the standards. It's not recognized as an appropriate accounting framework under which you can report any longer. So that is the reason why Treasury was required to make that decision. And that's the only reason. Otherwise, everything's looking pretty good so far on the account and the work we've done so far at this point. So they have to report in terms of GRAP, and that will continue going forward. I think they're trying to find ways of dealing with it. If I may just continue a little bit further on this, Defence would like to reincorporate the SDA back into the normal vote of Defence. I know that's one of the items that have been proposed. Another item is that bring the fund completely back as a separate line item within the vote as well. So there are different options currently being looked at, but obviously Treasury's approval will have to be obtained. I think the SDA serves a very special purpose, and I think the legislation which governs it serves a very special purpose as well. The need to change, I'm not so certain that the reasons often put forward are valid and sound. That's my position. Moving on to the issue of the contingent liabilities, Mr. Osango, the issue there is, if one has a look at the report of the department, you'll find there on page 237, There's a note there called Note 21, Contingent Liabilities, and you'd see you'd like to get some feel or idea what contingent liabilities are about. And if one looks right at the top of the page there, we'll say these amounts are not recognized in the financial statements and are disclosed to enhance the usefulness of financial statements and to comply with the statutory requirements of the PFMA. Now, one looks at those items there. The first item you see there under contingent liabilities, note 21, is housing loan guarantees, nature's employees, and then they refer to the annexure note. Now, if one goes to the annexure note there on page 237, sorry, I'm talking about the report. If one wants to go to the annexures, and if one goes to annexure 3A, on page 265, that annexure A there is a breakdown of that first item there, housing loan guarantees, on page 237. So 265 is the detail. Now what that is that the department is actually liable if an employee, when an employee purchases a house, the department actually provides a guarantee for that loan from the bank. Now, that guarantee stays in place for either a fixed period or until the value of the house is more than what the value of the loan is. And then the guarantee would fall away. But as long as that guarantee is with the bank and the employer, the Department of Defense, is covering the guarantee for that bank, for that loan, then the department is liable for that. Okay, so they show that value there. Because the bank can come any time if that person defaults and says, I want my guaranteed portion of the money back. So that's a contingent liability. It's contingent because it could happen. It doesn't mean it will definitely happen. But it could happen. If one looks at claims against the department, you often don't know whether, once you've been to court, whose favor they'll decide for. So the value there, of 258 million on the second item. Again, we list them in annexure 3B, they're listed, but that could happen or not. So again, it's a contingent liability. Those are current cases. Claims from other departments, monies which are owed by other departments, we're not sure this is what the Department of Defense will owe other departments. This will be things like possibly public works, saying that, look, we've done this work for you, ABC, but we've got a claim against you for that amount, but it's under dispute. Okay? Then, obviously, the department may have to pay that 7 million. Not guaranteed, but may. Okay? And then we talk about interdepartmental unconfirmed balances. And that's very typically the type of thing where, let's say, the Department of Foreign Affairs has issued visas at a cost on behalf of the Department of Defense to visit a certain country, something of that nature. And there's costs that will come through at the end of next month. Okay? But at the end of the financial year, the service has been rendered but not paid for yet. So that interdepartmental balance will come through next month or the month after. So those are amounts that the department will probably have to pay. Not necessarily they will have to, but possibly. Maybe that will help you understand continuing liabilities. So it's a possible liability that they may have to pay, but for which they could be liable as of this date. On the issue of properly prepared versus fairly reflect, I don't know, Musa, do you want to deal with that one? You probably carry more expertise there than I do.
This relates to the acceptable accounting framework. Like we have referred to GRAP, which is generally recognized accounting practice, that state entities normally report based on. The other basis is a general accepted accounting practice, which most in the private sector the companies will report on. And then the departments, as we have said earlier on, including Department of Defense, report on the modified cash basis. Those are now widely used frameworks for reporting, which are generally accepted. If we report audit findings for entities that have reported their financials based on those, then we use the word fairly state the financial statements fairly present, you know, that means present to a large extent in accordance with the acceptable accounting framework. When the entity has used other frameworks, like the entity basis that we were referring to before, which is not one of those widely used accounting frameworks, then in that case we can't use the word fairly present in accordance with the auditing standards. Then we'll use properly prepared in accordance with that framework that applies to that. So that is the difference. That means it complies with the framework that applies specifically to that, but that framework is not a widely used framework. The readers of financials will understand. That's why the basis must always be stated, so that you can interpret the financials based on what framework has been used. For example, if you're referring to the modified cash basis, that reports based on what was paid for, which is not normally what a private sector company, for example, will report on, which is accrual-based. You know, what you owe is not reflected when you report in terms of what you have paid for. You might be owing quite a lot, but that is not shown because of the basis accounting framework that we use. Those are just technical terms that we use when we give the audit opinion. I don't know if...
Just to make sure whether if we are saying it's properly prepared, are we saying it's not in the right way, or is it accepted or not accepted? Can you put it that way?
It is acceptable based on the specific framework that the National Treasury in this case allowed for that entity to report on. Like the SDA was allowed in the prior years to report based on the entity specific basis. That was allowed by the National Treasury, but that's not a widely accepted accounting framework worldwide. You know, that is specific for that one.
We're done. Honorable Menia, we want to wrap this session. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I just have three follow-up questions. I'm sure that the Auditor General can dispense with them in a few minutes. A follow-up question on the supply chain management. The Auditor General has informed us that, in fact, he has done a more focused audit in respect to supply chain management. I would expect that there would be a report as a result of that audit, and I wonder if the Auditor General would furnish me with a copy of that report. That's the first point. The second point, I'm interested in the Auditor General's view on the special defense account, which for me is a major problem. Would the new basis of accounting, do you think, result in more transparency? I say that because if you look at trends in expenditure pulling through the SDA over the last 10 years, you'll find that less than 2% of that expenditure is, in fact, on a sensitive project. Now, I would accept that it would probably not be in the public interest to disclose information about that 2% of expenditure. But the 98% of expenditure is largely on capital equipment and, in my view, should be disclosed and not tracked through the special defense account. What will the effect of the new basis of accounting be on the level of transparency? My dilemma is that I can read about capital procurement projects in Jane's Defence Weekly, but I can't read about them in the South African press, largely because they're hidden in the special defence account. The last question is just about processes. The department seem to have a fairly sprawling, if you like, defense diplomacy contingent with foreign attachés dotted all in every nook and cranny of the world. Quite what they're doing there, I don't know. That is not for you to answer. That's for the minister to answer. But how does one audit the foreign attachés?
Special defense account.
if one has a look at the process, it doesn't only order just for defense, but also for correctional services and SAPS and any other government department or agency which requires certain specialized equipment. The second area is, if one looks at the process that those projects have to go through, I'm not talking about sensitive here, I'm talking about across the board. There's a very clear process which has been entrusted to Arms Corps, which really is the procurement arm of the South African National Defense Force, full stop. That's really what it is. It's not unique. It happens in a lot of other countries in the world. I think Canada has got it pretty much right through a similar type of process as well. And if one looks at the way it's done, I think there's a relative degree of transparency that exists. But the problem is the SDA has always, to some extent, been overridden by the sensitivity around the account itself. I do believe, and it's one of the reasons why I supported GRAP when I received a call on it from Treasury, is I think it will bring about more transparency. I firmly believe that. But there's a difference between reporting on financial accounts in the fund and project management. Now, one of the concerns I've had, and I have shared this with the Minister as well, is that we have projects that start and have been running for maybe up to 15 years already. Now, that reporting process is very different. So you've got a process where projects are started and go through various stages of development over the years with costs allocated to those projects for development work, research work, testing, you name it. But we do not have a sound process of control over projects. And I think that's what you're getting at when one really gets down to the nitty-gritty here. Because no item is taken on charge in any assets register anywhere until it's actually procured, manufactured and procured as such. And for that reason, a lot of the costs going through the SDA are not purely for the actual purchase of an item. A lot of it's for the research, the development, and sometimes for the direct procurement as well. And that's what makes it difficult, so that you can follow Jane's and you can pick up items and projects that are occurring, but you won't find it in the SDA at all. But in terms of where the expenditure's gone during the year, that should give more transparent reporting. But I think we can accept that as far as the sensitive areas are concerned, you will not see detailed notes on it. You know, I think there's adequate agreement. Yeah. I'm quite comfortable that it will produce more transparent reporting. I just want to deal with the foreign missions. What we do is we do visit the defense missions overseas. We identify a few every year. We normally do that audit together with some other auditor in that country. We're heavily involved in United Nations auditing, for instance, here in South Africa, even the peacekeeping missions of the United Nations, for instance, and others. So what we do is we either link it in with our foreign affairs audits and to those missions, and we also undertake the audits during that period. But there's also another process that takes place here. We also go to the unit which deals with the foreign affairs offices, etc., and we audit expenditure, etc., which is going through those. Because then we get these changes to buildings, there's changes to there's costs involved there, expenses that take place, and that all forms part of the sample. And we ensure that monies expended on that are included in the samples as well. We get queries on it quite often. Issues on S&T, issues on expense overseas, etc. But that is done. How many are we choosing per year at the moment?
I'm not sure of these.
I know at one time, because of we're identifying so few problems, we're identifying one mission per year. And it wouldn't surprise him if we're still doing the same at this point in time. But we go through a risk process of identifying where's the one where the problems are.
Thank you very much, Chair.
There's just one question. I think it came from the Honourable Member, that was not addressed on the SDA. She referred to the financials that
are going to be completed by the end of November. What I was referring to is the audit process that we expect you are going to complete by the end of November. The financials are more or less ready. We should be receiving them in a matter of days, probably next week or so, the signed financials. And then we'll be able to complete our audit by the end of November, and then the report will then be tabled and presented following that one.
Honorable Menia, you want to come in small packages?
Chair, in fact, omitted to say this in my opening statement. I know that you want to wrap up, but it is really always a pleasure to have the Auditor General here, and I thank him and his office for their very good work during the financial year.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Let me thank the Office of the Auditor General. But as a way forward, I want us as a committee to expand on what the Honorable Mugabadeli has suggested. The comments from the Auditor General and the advices that we get from the presenters from the Auditor General are meant to be the guideline on what we are supposed to oversight. Now, what I would suggest is that our researchers here must take the presentation, identify those areas that need follow-up in terms of compliance with legislation, and then thereafter we incorporate this into our program, which should be quarterly, dates and everything, so that we should also assist the department, dates and everything. And on quarterly basis, we should just get a briefing from the department on these matters as to how far they are, or also invite the Internal Audit Committee every time. And then that can be done between the researchers and the committee secretary. Will that help, honourable members? Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You. Then the committee's second item on the agenda, which is the last, I guess, was about the adoption of the minutes. I'm sure you have been able to go through the minutes. You send your amendments to the. Yeah, you are excused. I thought you long gone. Because.
Rule is rule.
Honourable members, thank you very much. We just wanted to form a quorum. Thank you, comrade has come to help us to form a quorum on the minutes. So, few observations that I made on the minutes Mandy, you need to be very cautious about spelling the names of people here. Names of people are very, very important. You must check that. Because I don't think that should be a problem, because we have a register of all the names. If you don't know how they are spelled, you must go and look for the register. The accuracy of the attendance register should also be looked into. For instance, you can't just say the chairperson was not in the meeting. There's no apology. There's nothing like that, you know. And of course, the consistency in terms here of everything. Now, honourable members, then will I guess you have sent you whatever amendments to Mandy. Let us start with the minutes of Tuesday, 24 May. If there is anything that you haven't sent to Mandy, I can do that. If you satisfied that it has been factored, then we'll need a mover and a seconder. Honourable Mania?
Chair, I don't want to be obstructive, but do we have a quorum, given the fact that the member who's joined us is not, in fact, a member of this committee? A quorum requires that you have, I think, 50% of the members of the committee.
Are we, in the first place, are we 50% before, honourable member?
Yeah, I think we are 50% before the honourable member joins us, because he's adding the 50 plus one.
Okay. Then can we go on? If you are satisfied about the quorum. Are we forming a quorum with?
Chairperson, the committee consists of 14 members. Come again?
7 plus 1.
7 plus 1.
2, 4, 6, 8. 7. Are we not supposed to co-opt a member if we want to?
It's a technicality that I myself cannot confirm, but usually when we have a quorum problem, we normally go out and look for members to constitute the quorum, and it has never been queried before, unless if because it's not a usual day for members to meet today. And members are exhausted already. They can always ask through your chairperson that we postpone the minutes again and not argue on the quorum.
No, the general practice is that if we do not form quorum, we co-opt. Now, is there anything contrary to that? Can we go on? Because we have co-opted a member, Honorable Menier.
Chair, I mean, given the fact that we're dealing with the minutes, I'm prepared to go with it. But if it were a different matter, perhaps I would not.
Good. We'll also verify that this issue of corruption as to whether there is a policy position. Can we look at the minutes of the 24 of May 2011? A mover and a seconder. A mover, Honorable Mugabadeli.
I move with the corrections that I sent over.
Mover with the amendment. Any seconder?
Okay, I'm just a little bit worried if we're going to say with the amendment that we are not sure of what are the amendments. I mean, it becomes difficult to just look at the amendments that we don't know.
So you want us to go pitch by pitch and look at the amendments?
It's rather be better that this were the amendments.
Honorable Mazia?
Yeah. Possibly, Chairperson, what we should be doing is to say that Mandy should lead us when you open the minutes, if there are amendments of on those minutes. Mandy should identify those amendments so before we even go into the normal page by page, like for instance saying that on page so and so this amendment, page so and so this amendment, and then we concur.
I think that is the sensible route to take, Honorable Member. Mandy, on the 24th of May, what amendments?
I was just adding Ms. Mugabadeli's name to those present.
Adding Ms. Mugabadeli's name to those present. That has been done. Can we have a mover and a seconder? A mover, Honorable Masango. A seconder, Honorable Mugabadeli. We go to the minutes of the 31st of May. Mandy?
No amendment.
26 of May. Too fast. Mandy?
No amendment.
No amendment. Can we have a mover? About grammar.
Yeah.
Can you work out on the grammar? Okay. Then can we have a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes of the 26th May 2011, Honorable Mabeta?
Chairperson, I move for adoption.
Seconder. We need a seconder before we go on for the seconder for the adoption. Honorable members, we need one a seconder for the adoption of this minutes. Honorable Mazia?
We move for the adoption.
Second to the adoption. Then we go to the minute of the 31st May.
Just again, Ms. Mugabadeli's name. Mark.
The only amendment is about Ms. Mugabadeli's name. Can we have a mover and a seconder? Honorable Mabede.
Chairperson, the correction, sorry, I didn't change his name. My name is reflecting on both, on the presence and the absence and the apologies. So
Can that, was that amended?
Okay.
It's amended. Honorable Mania?
Chair, I was in contact with our committee secretary yesterday and asked her to amend a particular minute. I wasn't sure what date it was on. I just want to confirm that that amendment has been made.
That was the 15th of June, but we are still going to listen to the record.
We'll talk to it when we come to it. Okay. So can we have with those amendments a mover and a seconder?
Are we dealing with the 31st of May?
Mm-hmm.
No, for a correction, I was present. I'm written present, and I'm moving. Yeah.
Then seconder? Can we have a seconder? Honorable Masango. And then we then go to 1 June 2011. There is no amendment. Can we have a mover for the adoption? Honorable Mabeta, you move for the adoption.
Yes, and also, I'm duplicated, but I move for the adoption because I was present.
Oh, duplicated. Maybe
like my name.
Okay. Then you move for the adoption with this amendment, and Honorable Gabadele for the seconder. 7 June, any amendments, Mendy? No amendments. Can we have a mover and a seconder to the adoption of the minutes? If you don't move a second, we won't adopt, Honorable Man.
Okay, correction. My apology is not reflected on the 7th of June.
The apology is not reflected. Yeah. Can we reflect that? And then after that, we have a mover and a seconder. Honorable members, can we move for adoption of the minutes and second for the adoption of the minutes? June 7. Honorable Mabeta.
Chairperson, I move for adoption.
Can we have a seconder? Honorable Mlambo. That is 15th of June. Amendments?
We need to verify the recording of the discussion to include Mr. Mania's concerns.
Amendment. Did you factor my name because my name was not there? Okay. Can we then move for the adoption and second? What do you do?
We need to just postpone the adoption of this minute.
Let's postpone the adoption of the minute and for 15th of June. Right. Then we go to 29.
No, Chairperson, I just seek clarity to know if Honorable Mayor is not able to tell us what is it that he thinks is not in the minutes, and let's look at it and adopt the minutes. Why should we wait for the recording when we are all here?
No, seemingly what he wanted to be factored in the minute is not in the minute now.
I agree, Chairperson, but if he states it in the meeting now,
okay, we may include
between
it.
Him and Mendy, possibly they were not able to meet one another halfway. Let him present it to the committee so that we see if it rings a bell in our minds.
All right, we can debate that, Honourable Mania.
Chair, I did review the minutes. I called Mandy yesterday,
and said that the section that I would like included in the minute is the following section. Members will remember that there was a moment in that meeting where I asked the state law advisor on three occasions to provide me with an opinion on the concept and the definition of military veteran. Despite my request, the state law advisor was not permitted to answer the question. That is what I would like included in the minute.
That's the amendment from... Hello? No, no. Who did not permit the... Who did not permit the state law advisors to give you that advice, Honorable Mania?
Chair, my recollection, you did.
Can we go back to the records before we... We need to be very...
Chairperson, I think we should just check the venue. If I may recall properly, we were at G26 that day. And the minutes of this, this one of the 15 we're talking about is M514, which is not the place where the issue took place.
It was the G26.
Yeah, so I think it was the 1st of June, not the 15th of June, when these things happened. So I'm just looking at the venue. The venue was G26 that day. And you were not actually the chairperson that day. Mr. Mazia was actually chairing the meeting, if my memory serves me well.
Okay. What do we do? Can we ask Mandy to verify let's postpone this minute and then we'll verify that. Then we pass this the 15th of June. 1st and the 15th of June. Okay. That's right. Then we go to the 29th of June now. 29th of June. Any... 29th of June, do we have any amendments, Mandy? Nothing. Can we have a mover and a seconder for the 29th of June, Honorable Member? 2011, Honorable Mkabadeli?
I move.
Move. Can we have a seconder? Honorable Mlambo, seconded. 21 July 2011. Can we have any amendments?
None.
No amendments. Can we have a mover and a seconder, Honorable Members? Mover and a seconder for the 21 of July. Mover and seconder.
I'm just inviting Honorable Masango or Honorable Menier to at least once move for the second.
Honorable Masango, move. Can we have a second? So, Honorable Menier, thank you very much. We are going to the 17th of August. Any amendments? Did you put my name there?
I put your name.
Okay. Can we have a mover and a seconder, Honorable Menia? A seconder, Honorable Masango. On the 24th of August, 2011, any amendments? No amendments. Can we then have a mover and a seconder, Honorable Mazia, Honorable Mabeda, seconding? What, on which minute? There is Mr. M.
Yeah, and I think I saw it after he passed another set of minutes. So
Mr. M. Coop, who's the Mr. M? We must correct that.
Mr. Nana.
Huh?
It's Mr. Nana.
Nana.
I'll correct.
Correct that. Then can we adopt the minutes with that correction? Eh?
Yeah, that's going to help. Also, the 31st of May.
We must also go back to it. Then we go to the 5th of September, Honorable Member. Mandy, any amendments? Amendments, did you put my name there?
I put your name.
Okay.
I'm sure
Mainly, instead of putting chaplain's name, it's putting man, because man is against double.
Double, okay, yes, put you. Yeah. You move for adoption. Thank you very much, Honorable Mameda. Honorable Blambo, thank you very much. The 14th of September, 2011. Any amendments? Mandy?
No
amendments. Can we have a mover and a seconder, Honorable Mgabadeli? Seconder, Honorable Minia. 21 September? Any?
No amendments.
No amendments, that is the last of the minute. Mover and a seconder? Honorable Mazia, seconder? Honorable Minia, we left with minutes for? So to verify in the recording,
yes,
about honorable Manian. Okay, thank you.
But Chairperson, what I do not understand is that we are putting aside 2/3 of minutes when it is said that what is missing in the minutes was on the day when the meeting was at G26. So I'm not sure why we are putting aside 2/3 of meeting minutes.
Now what is the logic?
We're unsure on which.
We're unsure on which meeting.
Then the complaint does not hold.
Honorable Mlambo?
I think my understanding is that we are sure that it was G26, and that was the meeting which was held on the 1st.
On the 1st?
Of June.
On the 1st of June.
This is not correct.
Unless that's not correct also, then, but I believe that is correct.
Do you have any problem in having Mandy verify?
No.
Not a problem, Chairperson, except to say that we are putting 2/3 of minutes aside. And if we are putting 2/3 of minutes aside, it means the argument is not holding. Because when we correct minutes of a particular date. And that particular date, as Honorable Masango stated, it was the day when we were at G26. Now, if it is G26 and another venue, then technically already it says that that amendment does not hold.
Okay. Honorable Malambo?
I suggest that you adopt the minutes of the 15th and peg those ones.
The first.
Yeah.
Honorable members, can we adopt the minutes of the 15th and then take the amendment to the 1st of June to verify? Do you have a mover and a seconder for that? You move Mazia, you second Honorable Mabeta. You check the consent of Honorable Mania on the 1st of June 2011. Thank you very much, Honorable Member. The meeting is adjourned.